It was there in the bottom of Ayin Aleph on the bed by the Mishnah, which it says, Ben Sorero Mure Nidon Al Shem Sofo. This is what we've mentioned before already, but that the basic premise that a Ben Sorero Mure is Nidon Al Shem Sofo, that we look at what the end game or the end result of what this individual is going to do. So Yamut Zakai, Va Yamut Chayav. Better that he dies when he is still in the process of becoming evil and is still innocent, rather than to allow him go down a path where you actually be chayav, and then the outcome or the result for this individual would be much worse. Shemitatan shel rishayim hanalehem v'analeolam. When rishayim pass away, it's good for them because they stop sinning, and it's good for the world because their evil plots are there no longer there. Zadikim ralehem v'raleolam. A tzaddik passes away, it's the opposite. It's bad for him, he can't continue to do mitzvot, and it's bad for the world because they protect the world at this point in time. So the yayin v'sheina, the rishayim, hanalehen v'hanaleolam. Wine and sleep are good for the rishayim because it prevents them from doing bad or evil, and it's hanaleolam because their evil plots are somewhat squashed at this point in time because they are drunk or sleeping, they're unable to carry out that evil. Tzadikim, rather hem, rather leolam. But the tzadik, it's the opposite way around. When he is sleeping or drinking, it takes him away from doing the avodat Hashem, takes him away from doing the mitzvot. And it's rather leolam, again, when they're not learning Torah, when they're not doing what makes them tzadikim and helps protect the world, then it's bad for everybody also. The pizur the rishayim hanalehem v'hanale olam. The disbursement of dispersing of the rishayim is good for them again because they cannot get together and have a cabal of rishayim get together and plot the awful things. So it's good for them because they don't sin v'hanale olam because they aren't able to come up with these wonderful plans. Tzadikim, rather hem, rather leolam. Again, tzadikim, when they are divided up, then they can't, it's bad for them, it's bad for the world, in the sense that they can't share their Torah, they can't be in a chabura of individuals who can sharpen each other, make each other better. Kinus l'rishayim, rather hem, rather leolam. The opposite is true. Of course, if kinus, when they are gathered together, rishayim is bad for them and bad for the world, because then they are going to come up with evil plans together and wreak more havoc over the world. The opposite truth of tzaddikim. Again, it's beneficial to them and the world if they get together, if there are more of them together. Sheket, l'rishayim, ralehem, v'ralei olam. When things are peaceful, meaning that the rishayim have plenty of time to think and to come up with their evil plans, then it's bad for them and bad for the world. Tzaddikim, when it's quiet and there's serene for them, then it's better for them and the world because they're able to be osek b'mitzvot of the Torah and they don't get distracted with other items. The Gemara says, Tanya, we go see a glid omer v'chi mipnei ma mipnei she'achal zeh tartimar basar v'shata chatzilog yayin ha'italki amrat Torah yetzei lebeidin lisakel. This person ate some meat, drank some wine, and all of a sudden we're taking him out to be put to death. Doesn't seem to be that there is a either midah connected to midah, or that the punishment fits the crime. Right? They're not on equal footing. Ella higia Torah softo tosho ben soro more. Torah realizes what the outcome or what the long range possibilities for this individual are going to be, or what he's going to turn out to be, and therefore he's going to, so, Megamer Nechse Aviv. In the end, he's going to finish off the possessions of his father. And then he's going to want to keep up his, we'll call it an addiction loosely, but he's going to keep up his lifestyle that he's become accustomed to. And he's unable to do it because the money is gone. You would say the Parshat Rachim will go out onto the way, the highways, and the forks in the roads. He'll become a pirate, a marauder. He'll start to rob people or be a thief in order to keep up his lifestyle. So Amra Torah, Yamot Zakai, Val Yamot Chayav. Better that he dies now when he's a Zakai, Val Yamot Chayav. And then better then he should do that rather than be Chayav. Shemita Tan Shel Rishayim Hanalehem Ve'alna Le'olam. Tzadikim Ralehem Rali Olam. So this is very similar. I'm going to translate it to our Mishnah. Shina. Right, Shina V'yayin, Shina V'yayin, Rishayim hanalahem v'anale ulam, l'tzadikim ralahem v'anale ulam, sheket l'rishayim ralahem v'anale ulam, tzadikim hanalahem v'anale ulam, pizur l'rishayim hanalahem v'anale ulam, l'tzadikim ralahem v'anale ulam. So again, it repeats our Mishnah that the benefits when things are allow the Rasha to carry out his evil plans, then it's bad for him and bad for the world. And for the opposite is true for the tzaddikim. I have to ask that the one question that's always asked is that Sifti Chachamim raises it in Sefer Breshit about Ishmael. When Ishmael is out there and he's dying by his mother Hagar, and he are out there in the desert, right? And the pasuk says, "Vasher hu sham." Kadosh Baruch Hu, Malachim say, "How could you save Ishmael here?" Right? He's going to go in the future. His children are going to cause tremendous pain to Bnei Israel. And Hashem says, "Vasher hu sham." Ha'im achshav hu, right? Tzadik or Rasha?
And it's a,
right. So that's maybe the answer. Might be that over there, the Malachim are pointing out what his descendants would do, not exactly what Ishmael would do. I mean, here we're describing an individual. We're not describing what's going to happen to his children. We're describing about how this individual himself will take a path that will lead to evil and destruction, both for himself and the world. So we say, let's stop it earlier. And we saw before that there are many qualifications for this. If we see there's any hope of improvement or tshuva, then we don't allow him to be killed. Remember, we said if he's a chabur of mitzvah, if there's one individual who's there, even if it's a whole group of not good people, anything like that, that we see there's a possibility that we can bring him back, we don't kill him, because this is all focused on what's going to happen to this individual or whether there's any chance to bring him back. Right, by Ishmael, they were talking about future generations. So when you're talking about Ishmael himself, Basher Husham, let's look at Ishmael. At this point in time, Ishmael's, you know, his behavior, his tzaddik okshav, and even as Shaul points out later on in his life, he does tshuva. You know, this individual himself is not someone that we're going to say, Hashem sofo, he's so evil that we're going to kill him right now. Or true in the future, that we'll have to deal with the future generations. But this is focused very, very much on the individual himself and the ability of this individual to reach a point of tshuva and to not go down a path that is irreversible in terms of his ability to come back. And that's, you see, the machlokas, whether Ben Sorer or Morer ever happens, right, the concept that we always think that a person can do tshuva, right, the opinion that says Ben Sorer or Morer never happened is lo hayah, right, it wasn't ever possibility, is because maybe that's the concept behind it, that there's always a chance to do tshuva, we always hope for individuals to bring them back and to see them improve their ways.
Case in which it would apply is so narrow that you're still
right. I would agree that the other opinion, it's not that he doesn't, the conditions, as you're saying, are so narrow, and the redeeming value, that's a possibility. We say that the chance, even if you say there is a Ben Sorer Merer, it's such a narrow situation that it's also not, he could also believe that it's just we always look to the positive of the individuals and hope for their tshuva. Right now, next case here is Haba B'machteret. So Baba Mechteret here is included because of its similarity in Nidon Hashem Sofo. Baba Mechteret has the same din as the Ben Sorer Moreh, which is that we're not focused on what he's doing now, we're focused on what his final intent is. And that is because if he comes, and what's the possibility, the Gemara is going to discuss this in 1 second, but if somebody stands up with the Baal, he comes up, he's digging a tunnel underneath the house to come in, and all of a sudden he bumps into the Baal Abayit. What is he going to do? He's going to turn around and run? No, he's going to kill the Baal HaBayit and he's going to move forward. So since we think that his final intent, or that in his mind when he entered this situation, he says, I'm going to do this no matter what, and if I have to kill, I will kill, then we look at him as being already a Rodef. And if he's a Rodef, we're Nidon Hashem Sofo, and we say that you can kill him. So that's a Baal HaMechteret Nidon Hashem Sofo. Therefore, Hayah Baal HaMechteret b'Shiberet HaChavit, he comes in b'Machteret and he breaks something on his way. Im Yesh Lo Damim, Yesh Lo Damim is the term that the Pasuk says, right? Then, if Yesh Lo Damim is the person who's going to kill the Baal HaMechteret. So, Im Yesh Lo Damim means that you are going to be Chayav if you kill him, because Yesh Lo Damim, his blood is worth something, therefore, you're going to be punished for it. Then he's Chayav. He has to pay for the monetary damage he did, because he's not Chayav Misa. If he's not Chayav Misa, then you got to pay. As on the other hand, Im Ein Lo Damim, on the other hand, if you kill him and you are Patur the Gamre, then you are patur, he is patur, the Baal HaMechteret is patur from the money damage, because you have mita At the same time that he's chayev mita, he did the damage. And we always say that you can't be, you're not going to be chayev mamon. It's kimle derabim minei, or this idea that when you're chayev mita, you're not chayev mamon. And that's even, and it says Rashi points out, but we've seen this before also, that it doesn't matter that he's not put to death in the end, or he's not killed. The mere fact that you are able to be put to death, since it's chayev mito shogegim, if you're a shogeg and you were chayev mita and be shogeg, then you'd also be patur mina tashlumim. It's not the fact that you have to actually do it and then be punished for it. Even if you're not punished for it, you're still patur, because at the moment that you just did the mamon, the damage, you were chayev mita. So Amar Rava, my time of the machteret. So what's the reason? By machteret is what we just discussed. Chazaka in adam ha'amid atzmo al memono. The first chazaka is that a person will not stand idly by when his money is being taken. You break into someone's house and you're going to take his possessions. They're not going to just say, oh, you know, welcome. Take whatever you need. No, the person's going to stand up. They're going to try to protect their possessions. And based on that, so the robber, the thief, or the machter, comes in and says, well, if he stands up, if the Baal HaBayit's going to stand up to me, doesn't let me do what I want to do here, right? So I'm going to kill him. So the premise or the basic idea is that he knows when he comes in that the Baal HaBayit will not prevent him from doing what he wants. And since the Baal HaBayit will prevent him from what he wants, when he goes in, he must know, or he must be thinking, I will kill him in order to ensure that I get my job done. So that's the premise here, which is that we assume that even though the individual has not killed yet, he will kill if he's faced with the opportunity or the need, he will kill. Now, Batorah Amra, in Balachor Gecha, Ashkim Lorgo, this is a classic case of Rodeif. If someone's coming to kill you, you stand up first and protect yourself and kill him. So since we know, or we've read his mind, that there's an umdana de milsa here, that he's going to kill you if he has the chance. Therefore, you protect yourself and kill him first. So Amar Rav. Rav says, Ababa machteret v'natal kelim b'yatza patur. Person who comes in with machteret, walks off with a bunch of things, he's patur from returning them. My daima, what's the reason? B'damim kananuhu. He paid for them with his blood. I mean, what does that mean, paid for him with his blood? When he came in, he was chayev mita. So when he walks off with the items, he's patur because he paid for them with his blood. So Amar Rav. Oh, so right. That's what Rav was about to say, what you're saying, Tzvi. How does that make sense? He doesn't have to return a few weeks later. Nobody's, you know, he's not being put to death, and he's walking outside with all this guy's stuff. And
the victim, a few weeks later, he can just go and kill
him. No, the victim can only kill when it's in the process of machteret.
So that's why we have this question.
Right. Exactly. So now, Amar Rav, Mistavra, Milte, Darab, Bishishiber. The Rav's statement makes sense if he broke something when he was on his way in. Why? Because when you break something, how do you do beishivat gzila asher gazal? You have to pay money. So there we say mita betashlumim don't come together. You can't be chayav misa and also be chayav to pay. On the other hand, to let know, because they're not around anymore. Aval natal, but if he takes them and they're still here, lo. Why? Because all he has to do is, for instance, in this case, walks off with this guy's stereo system. And then he comes back, you know, 2 weeks later, the victim goes, he says, oh, that's my stereo system. He says, yes, but you could have killed me when I was there, so it's my stereo system now. You can't get it back. Anyway, so what do you mean? That the stereo system's right here. It's looking right here. Just hand it back to me, because it's a Veshivat of Zeila Asher Gazal. Over there, he's not chayav any money. There's no tashlumim. It's give back the object that you took. So therefore, Rabbi says, why should he be patur? Rabbi says, velukim. Rav said his statement even when he took it. Because in the case where, for instance, if you are not allowed to kill him, in the case where the Baba Machteret, we'll see the cases where you're not allowed to kill him, but venensu, and then the object was nenas, chayav, you are still chayav. Alma b'rishute kaima, that shows that you're a chayav, that means it's in your reshut. Achanami b'rishute kaima, also over here. So there are two possibilities to look at the ganav. When the ganav comes in and takes the object, again, when it breaks, we don't have any questions, because if he does damage, we don't have any questions because he owes him money. When it comes to money, we say you can't be chayav mita and chayav tash lumim. But when he doesn't break it, what's the status of the object? The status of the object, does it still belong to the original owner and it's just a pikadon by the ganav? Or has the ganav taken full possession of it and now he has to return it to its original owner? So Gemara says, I'll prove to you that it's not a pikadon. It's not in the original owner's possession, but rather in possession of the ganav. How do I know that? Because a ganav, what happens if something happens to the item while it's in the ganav's possession? This is again in a case where it's where it's yeshlo damim, in a case where you are not permitted to kill the ganav, and then he has the object in his house. So now he's chayav to repay you the object, and what happens? It breaks. Ve'ones, it dies. Meita machmat, right? That's ma, just, it dies. There's something that has nothing to do with the ganav's taking it, and it damaged, or he has no, he had no influence over the fact that the object is now problematic. Ones, complete ones. Over there we say the ganav is chayav. Wait a minute, why should the ganav be chayav? It's an ones. The only way you could say that a ganav is chayav with ones is if it's in the possession of the ganav. Because the ganav now has an obligation to return the object, to return the money, and when he can't do that, he's got to pay. But if you say that the object is a pikadon, and it's still in possession of the original owner, if an ones happens, the ones happen to the original owner, assuming that there's no influence. Again, assuming that it's not because it's in the ganav's possession that this happened. It says, mali hocha, mali hatam. The ganav can say, listen, it would make no difference. You die in my house, you die in your house. Nothing changed over here. Then the ganav says, it was your object. He died. Your horse died. Your cow died. Why do I have to be responsible for it? But no, the Torah says, chayav, bayonis. Ah, if you're chayav bayonis, that shows that the ganav really has possession of it. Well, if the ganav has possession of it, then when it comes to a case where ein lo damim, in a case where you are not chayav for killing him, where he's deserving of the death penalty, then if he takes it, it's in his possession as well. If it's in his possession, now you're faced with the choice. Pay and death. And we know, whenever you have the death penalty, no paying. So you shouldn't have to pay it back. So that's what Rav's position is. Rava disagrees and says, only when it is the case of Shiber, where you have to pay monetary recompensation, then do we say that the mita overrides it. On the other hand, if you're actually handing back the original object, then you have to give it back. What's the logic of Rava? How does Rava explain what Rav just asked? So he says like this, no. So, Velohi, ki ukimna rachmana bishutei leinyan onsin. The Torah only places it into the possession of the ganav for ones. Aval leinyan mikne bishutei demarukaima. But when it comes to possession or ownership, it's part of the original owner's possession. Midei, do we have a paradigm like this? Yes. Midehava shoel. It's exactly like a shoel. A shoel is chayim in onsin, yet the object still belongs to the original owner. And why? Because the kol hanah shelo, all the hanah is for the shoel, and the balabait gets nothing out of it. So therefore, you're chayim in onsin, but it still belongs to the balabait. Same thing here with the ganav. All the hanah is for the ganav. Right? The owner is getting no benefit out of the ganav holding it in his possession. I mean, that there's absolutely nothing that the balabait gets out of this. So since all I know is the ganav, is chayav an onsin, but nevertheless, it belongs or it's still in the possession of the original owner. So therefore, you will come out with a situation in which, if he is chayav mita, and he walks off with it, and the object is still intact, then he has to hand it back. Because that's still in the original owner's possession. He didn't take anything. It's not called compensation. It's not called mamon, tashlumim, in the face of mita. There is no mamon. It's the original. You're just giving back what he owns. On the other hand, if you break it, and then you owe money, then you won't have to pay. But if it's a case where he's not chayav mita, case where he's not chayav and he takes it, so yeah, it's still in the original owner's possession. But it's in the original owner's possession, why should he be chayav an onsin? He's like a shoel. Shoel is chayav an onsin, even though it belongs to her, it's still in the possession of the original owner. Now Gemara says, Tanan, Mishnah, Bab machteret vishiberet achavit, yesh lo damim chayav, ein lo damim patur. So that's our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says, you come by machteret, you break something, if yesh lo damim, if you are not allowed to kill him, chayav, then he's got to pay for it. Ein lo damim, if you are allowed to kill him, patur. Taima de shiber. Our Mishnah only gives the example of shiber. Dechei ein lo damim patur. Then when you're allowed to kill him, he's patur. Hanatal lo. Then when he takes it, no. I mean, that's a good proof to Rav. It supports Rav's position that our Mishnah, Rav's position, supports Rav's position that shiber is the only instance where you are patur. So who I did? No, my says look. Who I did? Afilu natal nami. V'hakadoni shiber et achavit. Why does he give that example? K'mashman d'chiyish lo damim. Avakav d'shiber nami chayav. Comes to teach you that when you are not permitted to kill him, then even when he's shiber, he's chayav. My says pshita maziku. What do you mean? Of course, he's a mazik. No, k'mashmalan d'afilu shlo b'kavana. He was running through the tunnel, he was running into your house, and he breaks something on his way, it was not intentional. He's considered a mazik, and he has to pay for it. Mazes, my kamashlan, again, what are you teaching me? Adam, muad, liodam. Person is always chayav. Be, tanina, we have a Mishnah. Adam muad olam. Wait, I'm sorry. Gemara says, "Maika mashamun is Adam muad olam." It's coming to teach us the Mishnah. Adam muad olam. Gemara says, "Tanina, we already know that from a Mishnah." Adam muad olam is babakama ben shogeg ben bemezid benis bonus ben baratzon. Person's always held accountable for their damage, no matter how it happened or how it came about. So Gemara says, "Kasho." It's a question. This Mishnah, our Mishnah, is a problem for Rav's position. Rav's position says there's no difference between Shiber and Natal. Our Mishnah does not sound like that. Our Mishnah sounds like it's Shiber Davko and not Natal. You want to explain it somewhere else? Well, all the other Chidushim that you're going to come up with, we know already from other places. So you're not teaching me anything new. So now, why does the Gemara leave it as a Kasha, not a Tiyufta? It's a very interesting Rashi over here. Rashi explains the difference between a Kasha and a Tiyufta. It's in the Rashi called Kasha. It's about midway through the widest lines in Rashi. Kasha manita and the Tevutza alibi to Rav. According to Rav, it's very hard to understand our Mishnah. Mikomakom Tiyufta lohavi. It's not a Tiyufta. Delam behejyoktoni lo. It's not explicit in our Mishnah, Natal Chayav. Meaning that we only got it from an inference from our Mishnah, not explicit in the Mishnah. Ve'ike elishnuye beduchaka kedushanin. You can fix the Mishnah, you can explain the Mishnah, beduchak, like we said, even though it's already a Mishnah somewhere else, da da da. So on and so forth, we still say there's a possibility to explain the Mishnah, it won't be a problem for Rav. The Mishum Reisha Nakat Shiva, Shiber, because of the Reisha it said Shiber, or something to that effect. And this is exactly the difference between a Kushiya and a Tiyufta. Tiyufta is that we have no way to explain the Mishnah, except to be against the position of that Amora. Over here, it's a Kasha, because our Mishnah is very difficult to explain according to Rav, but you can explain it. It's a parallel structure. He wrote Shiber because he wrote Shiber in the beginning, or he wrote Shiber because he teach you Adam Mu'ad Olam, even though we know for another Mishnah. Again, those are Dochak, we would have to explain it that way, but we can at least figure a way out. So that's it. That means a Kasha. If we couldn't figure a way out, then it would be a Tiyufta. Meiti Rav Bibi Barabaya. Gonev Kis B'Shabbat. We saw this in the Gemara in Bava Kama, Perek Meruba. That someone steals a wallet on Shabbos, chayav. He has to pay back the wallet. Shariach nitchayev b'gneva, kodim sheyavoli de yisur Shabbat. Because he's chayev in the gneva as soon as he picks up the wallet. He's not chayev for hutza'ah on Shabbos until he leaves the property of the nignav, until he leaves the property of the victim. Hayami garer v'yotzei, instead of picking it up, he drags it out. Then, patur, shari yisur gneva v'yisur skila bayin ke'achad. Because then he becomes chayav on the gneva when shinoi reshut is when he takes possession of it. At the time he has shinoi reshut, he also has hotza'ah, mi reshut l'reshut. So his chiyav misa for Shabbos and his chiyav mamon for the gneva come simultaneously. That's the case, he's patur, because you don't ain mitin u'mishalmim. There's no such thing as getting a death penalty and paying at the same time. So Gemara says, that'll be a question on Rava's position. Because over here you have a person taking something. He didn't break it. He's taking the physical object and he's patur to return it. So when he says no, they have to explain it. Hilchasa de shadino minara. The case there in Meruba is talking about a case where he threw it into the river. Or something happened to the object where he's not going to have to give the physical object back, but he has monetary compensation that he has to give. In that case, he's patur from the monetary compensation. But if the object was intact, in Ochanami, you have to return the object, even though he's chayav mita. Hey, Rava. Ignav le dichre, Rava, this is very interesting, Rava who has the opinion here, was stolen from him, dichre, ayalim, which are, rams that were stolen from him, with machtarto, was stolen through machteret, adrinu nihale, the ganavim came and returned them to him, velo kablinu, and he refused to accept them, amar hoyo v'nafak mipume derav. It's amazing, Rava thinks that Rav is wrong, that his position, he showed through our Mishnah, it's pretty clear that Rav's position is precarious. Nevertheless, Rava, out of tremendous respect for Rav, said that these ganavim took it, I will not take it back, because Rav says they are patur. Rav says they're patur, and I'm not going to take it back, because I don't have a right to take it back. Tosis asked the obvious question, okay, bidei adam, he's not chayav to give it back, but let's say lidei shamayim, they should give it back, he should accept it, so there you'll say lidei shamayim. So Tosis says, you have to say here that these ganavim only wanted to return it if they were chayav bidei adam. They weren't interested in the bidei shamayim part. But you see the tremendous respect that Rava gave to Rav in this instance, that even though Rava believed Allah was otherwise, had respect for Rav, he refused on his own money. It's on his own cost that he's passing like Rav. I don't know if he would impose this on anybody else, but for himself, he was willing to take into consideration Rav's position and cost himself money by not taking back his possessions. Rabbanan, Ein lo damim, im zarcha shemesh alav. So here we're going to have two brightot that interpret the pasuk. Basically, imzarcha Hashem eshalav is that the sun rose on him. And the Gemara is going to have both cases. The brightot is going to ask, "V'chi Hashem eshalav zebayuvad zarcha?" Since when does the sun rise only for one individual? The sun rises for the whole world. So what does it mean? So in one case, the Braisa is going to take the Pasuk and say, in lo damim is the statement before that. Or the part of the Pasuk afterwards is yesh lo damim. So the question is, in Mizrach HaShem HaShalav, which part does it refer to? So now the first Braisa says, in lo damim is that you are allowed to kill him. So in Mizrach HaShem HaShalav. So now it says, Ella. So what does it mean? If you are certain he's coming to kill you, then you're allowed to kill him. If you have a safek whether he's going to kill you or not, al te'argeyu. So therefore it sounds like from here that the burden of proof, or the burden is upon the victim here. The victim has to be sure that the ganav is coming to kill him, and then he can kill him. But if he can't show that, or he doesn't know that for certain, then he can't kill. Tanya Tanya Idach, we have another verse that says the opposite, which is im zachar shemesh alav, damim lo. Says that the end of the pasuk, the part after the pasuk, so damim lo over there, it sounds like you're going to be chayav if the shemesh comes up. Does the shemesh rise on him alone? No. If you are certain he's coming for peaceful reasons, then don't kill him. Vimlav. If not, hargeyu. So I mean, here the safek we say is kill. B'safek kill. In the first verse it says b'safek don't kill. So you have right kasho stama. You have two brayto that are kasho. So one says that the safek do kill, and one says the safek don't kill. So when it says, no problem, kosha, lo kasha, kan be'av alabein, kan be'bein ala'av. Depends who's coming in over here. If it's a father who's coming to steal from a son, over there we give the benefit of the doubt that the father will not kill the son, because rachmei ha'av alabein. So there we say, vadai, the rachmei ha'av alabein, the likelihood that a father would kill a child is so remote that you have to be absolutely certain that the father is coming to kill the son before the son is allowed to kill him. That's the brisa that says the burden of proof is on the victim. On the other hand, ben alav, when it's a son who's coming to steal from the father or anybody else, any other third party would be the same thing, if you're coming to steal, then the burden of proof, or we give the benefit of the doubt to the victim and say kill even b'safek. Because here we don't, there's no assumption of this person's coming for peaceful reasons or he's not going to kill you. Assumption, the default is he will kill you. So unless you know for certain that he won't kill you, go ahead and kill him. So Amar Rav, kol da'ati elai b'machtarta katilin l'nei. He says, anybody who comes to steal from me underground, I will kill them. Levar, one exception is Mirv Chanina Bar Shila. Chanina Bar Shila is the only person I wouldn't kill. Amar says, my daima, ilim u'shut tzadiku. Right? Well, if he's, because he said tzaddik ha-kaat ha-machtarta, what's he doing digging tunnels under Rav's house if he's a tzaddik? I mean, that, of course he won't kill him because he's not going to be doing machtaret. So, Elo, mishum dikim le begaveh demrachem alaik rachem aval abein. No, because I know about him. It was a statement, Rav's statement about Rabbi Chanina bar Shila, not that he would come to machtaret or I wouldn't kill him by machtaret, but rather he was indicating what he thought his relationship with Rabbi Chanina bar Shila was, that Rabbi Chanina bar Shila was like a father to Rav, or he loved him like a father does to a child, and therefore he was certain that Rabbi Chanina bar Shila would never do anything to his detriment.
Except
for him. Right. Right. Tanu Rabbanan, damim lo ben b'chol ben b'shabbos. Damim lo means you're not allowed to kill him, whether it's chol or whether it's Shabbos. In lo damim says you're allowed to kill him ben b'chol ben b'shabbos. So when it says bishlamo in lo damim ben b'chol ben b'shabbos, when it comes to chol and Shabbos, saying that it doesn't make a difference if it's chol or Shabbos, you're allowed to kill him. There I understand itzrich. There I need you to tell me this. Why? Sakadat chamin. I would have thought me did have a ruge beitin. That just like be like cases of people who are capital punishment by beis din, you come to execute them. The b'shabbos lo katlinan. We don't execute on Shabbos. Kamash malon the katlinan. That over here we do allow you to kill him, whether it's chol or Shabbos. If you're not allowed to kill him, that applies both on Shabbos and Chol. What's the relevance? Hashra b'cholo katlin. And if you can't kill him on Chol, b'Shabbos mibayi, what do you have to teach me about Shabbos for? So Rav Sheshit lo nitzuchal lefakeach alav et agal. No, here's coming to teach a different din or a side din, which is that what happens if the house collapses on him? He's in Bachteret. The house collapses. So this guy is a thief in the tunnel and he's buried in the tunnel. Do you have to go on Shabbos? Do you dig him out? So the answer is, in me'ein lo damim, then you don't dig him out. Because he was deserving of the death penalty, we don't get him out. On the other hand, yesh lo damim, if you were not allowed to kill him, then you have, he has a din like a regular Ben Yisrael, and you have to go dig him out on Shabbos. You have to get him out. Whether it's Chol, whether it's Shabbos, you have to try to save his life. He wasn't chayv mita. He's not chayv mita, even though he's a ganav. A ganav means that he's a sinner. But it doesn't mean that his life, you don't save his life. You have to save his life, so you have to clear out and take him out. Right, it is a different halacha. But the point is that so much so that you're not allowed to kill him, that he's considered a live person. Not only do we say he's alive and you can't kill him, he's alive and you got to go in and dig him out. I mean, that's the thing.
Why would we have the Habermann to say that because nefesh doesn't apply to this person if we already know that halacha is not high?
Okay, so we would say actively you can't go and kill him. Because he's coming in. But he was in a tunnel. He took his own risks. He went under there. We're going to have to dig him out and be mechal Shabbos on him when he passively was killed. Maybe you'll say, if he gets himself killed, that's a punishment from Hashem. So let him be. Whereas if you can't act to take the din into your own hands and kill him because he's not coming to kill you. So the difference between actively preventing or killing him versus passively letting him die because he was bama mechteret. So kamash malon, that we don't allow him to passively die. All right, Tanu Banan. Vilka. B'chol Adam umeit b'chol mita shata yichol amito. So now the machteret, the bala machteret, anybody can kill him, not just the balabait, because when you see that there's a rodef is chayv mita, not just the person who's being your daf can kill him, but anybody who sees him can save him. Number two is umeit b'chol mita shachol amito. You can kill him anyway possible, whatever the means to stop him you can use. Bishlam avukah b'chol adam itzrich. You need to teach me that. Zakadat chamina. Balabaitu dekim lei te'en adam amid atzmo amemono. By the balabait, we know that he won't allow this ganav to go through because he's going to stand up to him and let him take his money. Therefore, he's allowed to kill him because we're dealing with he's a near daf at that point. Aval acher lo, but maybe someone else, a third party, he should not get involved. Why does he get involved? Kamash malon to rodefu, that the machteret has a din of rodef. Vafilu acher nami, then the other third party can come in and save the near daf. Why do I need a lima to teach me that you can kill him with any death penalty possible? Right? We can learn it out from a murderer. When it comes to a murderer, you have to put him to death. That the person who kills, he's a rotzeach, he put him to death no matter what. I would think only with the death penalty that the Torah tells him. How do I know if he can't put him to death with the proper Beis Din's execution or death penalty that he deserves? That you'll have to kill him any way possible. Tamar Omar, mot yumat, mikol makom, no matter what. So if that's the case, if by Beis Din we say that they can kill him anyway, over here when we're talking about Rodef near Daf, where his damim is free, of course you should be able to kill him any way possible. You're almost acting in place of Beis Din in this instance. Gemara says, no, shiny hot, over there it's different. Damar Kra, mot yumat. It says mot yumat. We don't have a mot yumat over here. So you need some other inclusion. The Gemara says, wait a minute. So let's learn it out from it. You're right. Oh, I know Hanami that this is unique to Rotzeach. Well, let's learn from Rotzeach over here. Because we have this limud both by Rotzeach and by Gol Adam. And since this is, but the two psukim teaching us the same lesson. So if one pasuk comes, then it's setting down the principle. If you have one pasuk that has a special limud about it, we say that that's not the exception, that's the rule. But when you have two psukim, then they become the exception and not the rule. That's over here. So when you have two psukim teaching you the same exact din, they don't teach you other things. Because if they wanted to teach you this din, they'd say it in one place, and we'd apply it everywhere. That'd be the rule. The fact that the Torah said it in two places comes to teach you these are the exceptions, and everything else does not learn from here. So you can't learn it out from there, and therefore we need to have a pasuk over here to teach us that you can kill them any way possible. Tanu Banan, machteret, ein lo, en li elo be machteret, gagol, chatzeiro, v'karpifo, minayin. How do I know? I mean, the Torah says that he's coming in a tunnel. How do I know if he walks into your house, comes from your roof, right? He comes through the chatzer, walks in through the front door, minayin, tamalomar, yimatzea, ganav, mikol makom. Whatever way you find this ganav, no matter what. So then why does the Torah use the word machteret? Why is that helping you? Machteret zu, because most ganavim come through the machteret. So that's it, just telling you, that's the normal situations that he comes by machteret. But if he doesn't come by machteret, he has the same din over here. So Tanya Yidach, another brace of machteret, then Leila machteret, go chater over kapifomi, and I in Tamalomi Matse Aganav, become a comb, no matter what. Imkein matamalomer machteret, so why do you have the word machteret if it doesn't matter how he comes in? Machteret zuho hatrata, oh, by machteret, he doesn't require hatra'a, doesn't require warning. Someone who comes in through a tunnel knows what the outcome is going to be. You know what the outcome is? You're going to get killed if someone finds you there. So therefore, you don't need a warning. Whereas, when he comes in through your front door, or if he walks in through the chatzer and the karpaf or the windows, he comes in that way, there we don't assume he's coming to kill. The only reason he came in is because he saw an open door. He saw an opportunity to come in. So you chose to seize the opportunity. You didn't specifically dig a tunnel to get into your house. So over there, we say you need hatra. You have to warn him in order for him to be chayav mita. A katan that's really running to kill someone else, you're allowed to kill the katan. So Karasavar, he must told Rodeif, Eno tzarech hatra. Right, that Rodeif doesn't require any warning. Loshna gadol, veloshna katan. Doesn't matter if he's a gadol or a katan. You don't have to warn him, you kill him. So Eitvei Rav Chista, Rav Chista asked Rav Huna about this limud. Wait a minute, is that really true? Right, Yatsa Rosho, this is a case that we're going to have in the coming up in the Masechta, which is that a woman was giving birth to a child, and the child already began to come out. She's giving birth, and the child's head has left the woman. I mean, he's exposed. He's in the world now. Tzarosho inim gimbo. Then we do not kill this child in order to save the mother's life. Efishen dochim nefesh, bibnei nefesh. Because we don't kill one individual to save another individual. Vamai, why not? Rodefu, he's a rodef. He's killing his mother. He's coming out here. He's causing his mother. He's killing his mother. He's killing his mother. Then you're allowed to kill him. Why not? Marzeh shani otam demishmaya karat filo. But no, it's not him that's killing the mother. It's mina shamayim. And you have two people here. You have two individuals. The child is not actively coming to kill his mother. The circumstances or the situation created where the child's birth is going to kill the mother. So it's not the child who's making an active decision to come and kill the mother. He's a rodef mina shamaya. So over there we make a choice. Wait, the mother should kill the child or she'll kill the mother. We say, we stand back. And whatever happens, happens. Whereas if a child's still inside the mother, then he's not considered or classified as a nefesh. Over there, you can kill the child, or if you have to, chas v'shalom, kill the child, or cut off the child, the protect the life allowed, of the mother.
The mother's allowed to kill the child, but
no. Why would the mother? Not even the mother. Why would the mother kill the child?
To save
his
life.
Yeah, but she's not. I mean, killing the child is killing. We know that the din is by Yerag Val Yavor. You're not allowed to kill someone else to protect your own life. That's one of the three cardinal sins where you're not entitled to kill someone else. So why does she have a right to kill this child over here? Ah, the child's going to kill her, but it's not the child that's trying to kill her. It's the fact, the circumstances in which she is found that the child is going to cause her to die. But it's not the child that's making an actively coming to kill.
So
again, we thought, Rav Chista was asking, Rav Huna was asking a question, says, listen, it sounds from here that a katan doesn't have a din of a rodef. Because you see this baby here doesn't have a din of a rodef, you can't kill him. So the answer is no. This baby doesn't have a din of a rodef because he can't be a rodef. It's a minishamayo radvile. He's not killing the mother. He's not actively trying to kill the mother. It's the circumstances in which they're found that's causing the mother to be killed. You can't compare this to the case of katan. So name him Misaile. Let's say this is a proof to him that a katan has a classification of a rodef. Why should he rodef achar chaverolo or go? So he's running up his friend to kill him. Vomerlo re'ei shisrelu. So somebody on the side is warning him and says, look, he's a Jew. Uben britu. Right? Then not only is he a Jew, but he's shomer Torah mitzvos. Torah amra'a shofech dam adam ba'adam domo yishafech. The Torah says if you kill someone else, right, you have to, right, kill him. So amra Torah atzel damo shel zeh b'damo shel zeh. The Torah says, kill him. So, if you see that, you see what? That you are, don't require any hatra'ah. If you don't require hatra'ah, then you should be able to kill the katan just like you're killing the gadol. I mean that if you don't need bardas in order to warn them about the situation, then you go ahead and kill him. So, hi, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda. This statement was Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda. The Tanya, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, Omer, Chaver, Ein Tzarich Hatra'ah. The whole purpose of hatra'ah is to change it from being a shogeg to a mezid. So you don't require over here, the rodef, to accept the hatra'ah at all. Because, again, Rabbi Yosef Yehuda says that the acceptance of the hatra'ah is not important. What's important when it comes to hatra'ah is the fact that you are a mezid now and not a shogeg. So based on Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda's statement, the question was, do you have to have hatra'ah by a rodef? If you don't require hatra'ah, then you can kill a rodef who's a katan or a rodef who's a gadol. So here, let's say this is a proof that you don't require hatra'ah, because hatra'ah is not only that you warn him, but he accepts the warning. Over here we have a brayse that says he doesn't have to accept the warning and you kill him. So, that sounds like this statement before that you're allowed to kill even a katan Rav Huna statement, even a katan, because you don't require hatra'ah. The Gemara says, no, this hatra'ah that's mentioned in the Brice is authored by Riyosi Rav Yehuda, who says hatra'ah is not about acceptance, but rather to change him from a shogeg to a mazid. Once you've made your statement, he already knows he's a mazid. You know, you don't need him to accept it to become a mazid. So Tashma, we have an opposite price. Rote faya, rote fachar chaver olar go, amalo rei. Shisro, you see that you're going chasing a Jew, or ben britu, and he's a shomer Torah mitzvot, but Torah amra, shavich dam adam badam ho yishafich. Imamar, if he responds, yodi an ishu kein patur. Amanat kein an yiseh chayav. If he says, under yodi ani, I know, then, you know, you can't kill him. You're not allowed to kill him because he hasn't been machkir damo. That's what it's called. But he says, I'm not kin and he'll say, I know it and I'm doing it anyway. Then chayav, then you can kill him. So there you require hatra. It seems like full-fledged hatra by a rodef. So Mar says, lo, tricha dekai betray ivrei denaro. It's a case where you're on the other side of the river. So lo matzi gatzule, because you can't save him. You can't kill the rodef. Ah, so why do you require hatra? Maika, what do you need to do? The bayitule beidina. You're going to have to bring him to the base. The only way now is to punish him. If you can't kill him on the spot when he's a rodef, after the victim's dead, you can't kill him anymore. So you have to bring him to base. Then beidina by hatra. In order to bring him to base, you require hatra. So this price is telling me a case where the rodef cannot be killed by a third party because he's in a position where the third party can't reach him. So there, the only way to take care of him or to put him to death is to have him be brought to Beis Din. Beis Din requires hatra'ah, and that's why this brisa requires hatra'ah. So it's not a proof against Rav Huna that you require hatra'ah by rodef. It's the circumstances in this case that make it that you need hatra'ah because you're going to end up in Beis Din. Ibai teim amalecha Rav Huna ana damri katana de machteret. Damar machterto zuhi hatrato. Ein achanami, this brisa argues on Rav Huna. Rav Huna says, I have another brisa that supports me. I have the brisa that says, why does the Torah say machteret? Even though it's true, when he comes in through your front door, he comes in through your chatzer, your karpach, all those places you can kill him. So why does the Torah say machteret? Because machterto, he hatrato. The machteret makes him into hatra'ah. When a person is a rodev, that's his hatra'ah. You automatically have hatra'ah, you don't require any additional hatra'ah. And that's where I made my statement. I'm holding like that tana, that there's no additional requirement of hatra'ah once you are a rodev. And therefore, you can, if a rodev is a katan, you can also kill him because there's no requirement of hatra'ah. There's no requirement of being a bardat. If you're going to kill someone, then you have basically been mafkir your damim, and anybody, including the victim or a stand by a third party, can go ahead and kill them. All right, we'll stop over here.